It's 88.5 KCSN Sky Daniels. Happy to welcome Billy Bragg and Joe Henry to the station. Welcome, guys.
Nice, guy.
Nice
welcome
to be
back,
here.
Billy.
Well, thank you. I'm glad to be here.
As a matter of fact, the last time you were here, you had just completed Tooth and Nail.
That's right, with Joe.
At Joe's
house up in Pasadena.
And I remember, how, just so you know, he was so enthralled with the project and how... I guess you reached out and Joe
came through and
he said, come on over.
Yeah, and promised we could do it in 5 days. In fact, we kind of did it in 3 days. We had to sort of just mess around for the other 2 days. I wrote a couple more songs just to keep him happy, really.
Yeah.
Otherwise, we'd have been sitting there twiddling thumbs drinking coffee.
And he was amazed at the fact that when you said, I got a couple of guys that can work with us, and then he sees the caliber of artists that just happen to be hanging out in your basement.
I take the coward's way out and just hire really good people. Mm. I mean, that's really the thing.
You know what?
That's really a
production technique.
Yeah.
It's a secret. It's Joe's secret.
It really is just about populating the room with the right people and then giving them whatever support they need. You know, everybody needs something different. But it's not about telling anybody what to play ever. You just, you know, encourage people in whatever way they need to be encouraged and they'll give you everything.
Yeah. Now, as happy as I know you were with the results, and obviously... There was a camaraderie. Hmm. It's one thing, the convenience of Joe having a home studio, and I believe you told him just bring a toothbrush and underwear and we'll handle the rest.
Yeah.
It's a whole other thing when the two of you get together and decide to literally ride the rails.
It's a different deal in the sense that we're, you know, traveling on the train and we're going to be recording in a different space every song. But fortunately, not only is Joe totally open to that, but the engineer that he works with, Ryan Freeland, who also engineered Tooth and Nail, he was totally up for it as well. He saw that as a bit of a challenge. He constructed a kind of mic tree with four ribbon mics on, one for me and my guitar, one for Joe and his guitar, and then two ambient mics picking up the sounds of the environment we were in either side. And really, it was kind of like an adventure, really. It was like a kind of... not quite camping, but sort of, you know, we were sharing a sleeperette. Joe was on the top bunk, I was on the bottom bunk, and we were either routining the songs, getting them ready, discussing what song was going to be next, or actually hitting the platform and getting into finding a space in each of the railway stations. In the larger cities, the trains stop, they have wait times, you know, 30 minutes, 40 minutes. And it was trying to find space, set up, and get a couple of takes before getting back on the train and moving on.
Little girl, little girl, don't you lie to me. Where did you sleep last night? In the pines where the sun never shines. You shiver when the cold. Train I ever saw went down that Georgia line. The engine passed at 6 o'clock. The cab went by at 9. In the pines where the sun never shines, you shiver when the cold wind blows. Ooh, 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 ooh. Caused me to leave my home. in the pines where the sun never shines. You shiver when the cold wind blows.
I never even thought of that aspect of it. Mm. The fact that you were literally, as if you were troubadours,
yeah,
getting off, encountering another kindred spirit who wanted to hear some music, yeah, you had that
that's
much
all,
time.
Yeah, because if we didn't get back on the train, you know, that was the only passenger train that day, all the way down to San Antonio. And once we were past San Antonio, between here and San Antonio, the second leg, it's one passenger train every 48 hours. So if we didn't get back on the train, we were kind of stuck. Mostly in Texas. So, you know, we had to keep our eye. One of us, because we always played facing each other, one of us always had visual contact with the train and with the porter as well, because we spoke to him before we got
all said, aboard. You know,
exactly.
Well, they called that a few times, yeah, but one time it's for real.
Yeah. You know? We had to work out the for real one. Yeah.
Yeah.
It was the Mad Dash, wasn't
yeah
it?
But like Bill said, you know, we would be approaching a station and we would know what song we wanted to tackle at that stop, and we would be shedding that in the train car. And Ryan would get his rig sort of, you know, powered up and ready to go. And, you know, really, like sometimes it was 15 minutes, sometimes it was 30 minutes, but you'd spring off and you start to find somewhere where you think, oh, this might sound good. Yeah. We got just enough room to get some ambient sound, but also enough control that we could actually be musical in the way that we mean to be. You know, it was a field recording, very sincerely, but it still had to be musical. Still had to play like music. It had to be attractive to the ear. It can't just be that kind of document where you say, this recording tells me that music was happening there. You know, I'm looking at it through a sonic kind of opaque lens. It had to still sound musical, and that's where Ryan really came
into
play.
That's really Joe with his producer's hat on the ground. If it had just been two musicians doing it, I think it would have sounded different. Joe was all the time thinking of the big picture of how it's going to hang together. And I think that really helped having him be both producer and performer on this project.
Well, but you also, there was, I guess, in the pre-planning stage, there's clearly the folklore of the songs and the historical backstory of the songs. And then you had to not only decide what songs, but where were you going,
yeah,
and where were these songs taking you? So he had to kind of figure out what the train stops were going to be, and how did that come about?
Well, sometimes it worked out really straightforward, you know, and you'd be in a place where you knew this particular song. We have a song, a Carter Family song called Railroading on the Great Divide, and in between El Paso and Tucson, we actually did cross the Continental Divide, so that seemed to be a smart one there. Early Morning Rain, which is a song that looks back on how the railroad was from the perspective of a hobo sitting outside an airport, reflecting on the fact he can't jump on a jet plane like he can a freight train. That obviously was a great song to finish with, particularly as we arrived in Los Angeles Union Station just as the dawn was breaking. So that was very, very fitting. But other than that, we were trying to chuck them up in. You know, the more slower songs worked in the more intimate spaces, and we found the louder in your face songs, you know, Midnight Special, Rock Island Line, they worked in the larger spaces.
Well, it's knowing that your door is always open and your path is free to walk. That makes me tend to leave my sleeping bag rolled up and stashed behind your couch. And it's knowing I'm not shackled by forgotten words and bonds and the ink stains that are dried upon some light that keeps you on the back roads by the rivers of my memory, and keeps you ever gentle on my mind. It's not clinging to the rocks and ivy planted on their columns now that binds me, or something that somebody said because they thought we fit together walking. It's just knowing that the world will not be cursing or forgiving when I walk along some railroad track and find that you're waiting on the back roads by the rivers of my memory, and for hours you're just gentle on my mind. Though the wheat fields and the clotheslines and the junkyards and the highways come between us, and some other woman's crying to her mother 'cause she turned and I was gone, well, I still might run in silence, tears of joy might stain my face, and the summer sun might burn me till I'm blind. But not to where I cannot see you walking on the back roads by the rivers flowing gentle on my mind. Well, I dip my cup of soup back from a gurgling, bubbling cauldron in some train yard. My beard a rough and cold pile and a dirty hat pulled low across my face. Through cupped hands round a tin can, I pretend to hold you to my breast and find that you're waiting on the back roads by the rivers of my memory, ever smiling, ever gentle on my mind.
You did stop, though, in San Antonio at the Gunter Hotel, where Robert Johnson had recorded, and you went to the room?
Well, Bill just serendipitously got the room. I mean, we got in very late that night. We got off the train so that we could spend time the next morning in the hall, hopefully, because it's not owned by Amtrak anymore. So it's not about getting off in there. You got to find someone to let you in there, because it's now a, you know, they do weddings and bar mitzvahs and that kind of thing like that in there. It's a social
space. Did you file under either a wedding or a bar mitzvah?
No, we just found a janitor. We found a janitor. This is the San Antonio station we're talking about getting in there. But the Gunter Hotel was more of a trip, really, getting the suite in which Robert Johnson did his recordings.
I mean, we didn't ask for it. I mean, that they charged three times the money for that room because people make pilgrimage there. But we got off, we showed up about 2:30 in the morning, and we were bleary, and the desk clerk was bleary. And so without any ceremony at all, he just passed Bill the room key to 414. I don't know if anybody had tipped him off, or he was just feeling sporty, or that was just the closest
kismet
key, yeah, you know, in reach. But obviously a heavy number for people like us to step into that space. And we knew by the next morning, we knew we should record something in there, though it seemed, you know, we did not have any interest in trying to record a Robert Johnson song in there. That just seemed a little bit overbearing. I mean, too on the nose. Yeah. But still, to acknowledge that something absolutely significant to, deeply significant to some of us happened in that room, you could not do it.
Interestingly, the next song, that was a Jimmy Rogers song, Waiting for a Train, which we recorded in there. And when we got back to the UK, I was doing a bit of research around that song, and it transpires that Jimmy Rogers also lived in the Gunter Hotel for the last few years of his life. He had a radio show in San Antonio, and whenever he was there, he had a full-time suite at the Gunter. So we kind of, having gone looking for Robert Johnson, we found another spirit lurking in the background there.
Just the term riding the rails, it's evocative, you know, and it does speak of what happens. And you guys were cognizant of these weren't just songs that had entered into the folk lexicon, but they were populist documents of how life was, both good and bad, you know, what the challenges of the times were, what trains meant to advancing culture.
Yeah, that's a big part of it. I mean, this is part of our national poetry. And as we've been talking and sharing with audiences as we've been traveling along, you know, when a car appears in a song, it really typically represents a car. A plane flies through a song, it's usually just an airplane. But as soon as you conjure the railroad, there's a mythic, poetic authority to that as an image. In the same way that we talk to people all the time, even people in this country who've never been passengers on a train, still nonetheless have a deep romance attached to the idea of train, because it made folksy a very sprawling, disconnected populace in this country. I mean, that's just a fact. It is germane. It is like the artery system of our cultural heritage, and as such, it is a powerful metaphoric specter.
A good example of that is in Folsom Prison, which a lot of people consider to be a prison song, but I think actually really it's more of a train song, because it's not the bars that make Johnny hang his head and cry. It's hearing the whistle of the train. You know, he says at the end, you know, talking about the passengers on the train, he says, people keep on moving, and that's what's killing me. Hey. It's because the train represents freedom. The train represents possibility. Johnny has no possibilities. He's locked up in prison. But that train, every time he hears it, he knows that there's a world out there. And I think it's that metaphorical aspect of the American Railroad song that really drew us to it. You know, in a song like In the Pines, you don't even find out why this person is hiding in the pines, but it's something to do with the train. The train is clearly has a huge effect on their life. And you know, there's such a huge number of train songs, you know, because I think the golden age of the train in America, let's say from 1850 to 1950, before it was superseded by the building of the interstate network and then air travel, is kind of like simultaneous with the rise of American popular music. And by the time you get to 1910, you know, there's so many people working on the railroad, second only to agriculture in the United States of America at the turn of the late 19th century, early 20th century. It's in everybody's lives. So, you know, when you're writing about the railroad, you're writing about the ordinary people and their hopes and fears.
Oh, the rock on the line, mighty good gold, the rock on the line.
Road to
ride. Oh, that rock on the line.
She's a mighty good road.
If you want to ride it, gotta ride it like you're flying. Get your ticket at the station on the rock on the line. Well, ABC, double XYZ.
Cat's in the cupboard, but he can't see me.
Oh, that rock on the line.
Mighty good road.
The rock on the line.
Road to ride.
Oh, that rock on the line.
She's a mighty good road.
If you wanna ride it, gotta ride it like you're flying. Get your ticket at the station on the rock on the line. Well, I may be right and I may be wrong.
You're gonna miss me when I'm gone.
Oh, the rock on the line,
mighty good road.
The rock on the line,
road to
ride. Oh, the rock on the line.
She's a mighty good.
At the station on the rock on the line. Well, Jesus died to save our sins.
Glory to God, we're gonna see him again.
Oh, that rock on the line,
mighty good road.
Rock on the line,
road to ride.
Oh, that rock on the line.
She's a mighty good road.
If you wanna ride it, gotta ride it like you're flying. Get your ticket at the station on the rock on the line. Well, the train left Memphis 9:30.
Rode in the Little Rock at 8:49.
Oh, that rock on the line,
mighty good road.
The rock on the line,
road to ride.
Oh, that rock on the line.
She's a mighty good road.
If you wanna ride it, gotta ride it like you're flying. Get your ticket at the station on the rock on the line. If you wanna ride it, gotta ride it like you're flying. Get your ticket at the station on the rock on the line. your ticket at the station on the Rock Island Line.
We obviously have in the room between Joe and yourself, Billy, two students of folk music and a true comprehension of the stories that go behind it. It's a little different though when we're speaking of American folklore for you, Billy, because you had to have emissaries that brought that music to your attention as a young lad.
Yeah.
You've noted Lonnie Donegan as being one of them. Talk about how many artists come from the UK or other parts, and their first time in America, they say to us, "You guys realize this place is way different than where I'm from." But you needed to also understand a culture from eons ago.
Well, it wasn't only that, Sky. It's also our perspective of the railroad now. I mean, look, we didn't want to make a nostalgia record. You know, we could have easily gone in the studio, played some covers of some railroad records and made an album called, you know, Joe and Bill Like Trains. We had no interest in that. We wanted to take these songs back to where they came from and also to be able to talk to audiences and people like yourself about the way the railroad is now. I mean, the genesis of this idea really was in a project I did with a magazine called Aperture, a photography magazine, where we followed the route of the old Rock Island Line down into Arkansas. And in the week that we were doing that, I realised we went to Little Rock. There was one passenger train there a day. And, you know, from someone like myself who lives in a rural part of England where I can drive 20 minutes and get two trains every hour to London, that just seems inconceivable. And it's not as if the railroad doesn't function in the US. I mean, you know, you put more freight on the rail than any other industrialised nation. If the railroad disappeared tomorrow, your economy would grind to a halt. So it's almost as if these songs have been forgotten, but also the idea of crossing the continent on the train has been forgotten as well. So we really wanted to go out there, and maybe it took the perspective of someone from outside the US to see that. You know, maybe it needed someone to make that comparison, to recognise. Because I think, you know, you'll experience the railroad all the time. There's very few places in America you can't hear a rail train, you know, whistle blowing somewhere in the distance.
It's 2 blocks from here.
Exactly. So, you know, I think maybe you're a bit too close to the, you know, wood for the trees thing. So that important. But also, yeah, the role that Leadbelly's repertoire, really, via Lonnie Donegan in the mid-1950s in my country, inspired the generation that included the Beatles, the Rolling Stones, Van Morrison, in fact, all of those British Invasion bands, to learn 3 chords on a guitar. Was really Leadbelly. It was railroad songs. It was what we call skiffle. There's not really an equivalent here in the United States of America. But it was a kind of people who were hungry for a new culture, who'd grown up, you know, someone like John Lennon, candy was on ration until he was 14 years old. You know, he didn't have the same, you know, life as Elvis did or Carl Perkins.
He didn't have bottled water.
No, exactly. He didn't. So the American culture represented a way of moving to a different future. In fact, you know, I think rather, although they were playing old songs, they weren't looking backwards. They were trying to forge a path to the future, and they saw that future with Big Fins, Marilyn Monroe, science fiction, Robbie the Robot, you know, all these kind of things. And they used Leadbelly's railroad songs, if you like, to get on the Rock Island Line and ride into the future.
Now, that raises, you know, a question about the evocative nature of these songs and the historical, that almost that essence you were talking about that seems ingrained in people, even if they haven't been on the train.
Yeah.
Now compare that to what in your historical mind's eye you might expect to see on a train journey like this versus what you saw riding the rails today. Did you note how things had evolved for better or worse?
Well, I don't know if it really occurred to me to think about that evolution when we were riding. It wasn't that I was surprised by what I saw, but I had a lot of what I've carried around with me reaffirmed. you know, reminding me that the past is not past, you know, going through, you know, small town on a train, you pass through people's backyards. You're looking right in through their kitchen window. And it's not that it's shocking to do that. It's just shocking to see that they're still there in that way. I mean, there are places that we went where had you taken a photograph out the window, you know, it could be now, it could be 1952. It's completely timeless. And that in itself was a bit of a surprise to be reminded in ways that this has always been here. In my entire lifetime, this has existed. We've just been seduced away from acknowledging its significance in our world. But that doesn't mean it's gone away. You know, I can forget that I have a blood system in my body keeping me alive and keeping oxygen in my brain. That doesn't mean it's not significant to me walking around.
Yes, I would suggest that it is.
Yeah, yeah. And then all of a sudden you kind of get, oh, all right. This is not only available, it's essential. Like Bill says, you know, our economy completely depends on it. But very, very few of us in America have that as a conscious thought. We think of, you know, the railroad living in antiquity, and it does not.
Well, and these are the things that this was when you guys were coming over. I'm sitting here thinking, there's a certain amount of course, these two guys would have an appreciation for and an interest in this songbook. But then it gets down to, all right, that's the concept. Then there was the actual execution and what you learned and what you felt and what you experienced as you brought that concept to life. And it sounds to me like in many ways, it was a reaffirmation, and it probably deepened your belief and your reverence for some of the songs and the history that went behind them.
The interesting thing about the railroad is it's probably the last piece of what Groucho Marcus referred to as the old weird America that still functions. You can still buy a ticket for it. You can't buy a ticket for Stagecoach. You can't buy a ticket for a really properly operating paddle steamer that worked in the way that it worked in the, you know, in the 1860s. But the railroad's still doing a job, trying to do a job. Okay, the passenger railroad is not doing so well, but you get up close and personal with the freight train, and you're kind of rubbing shoulders with Woody Guthrie, and you get out in the desert between San Antonio and the environs of Los Angeles, and you think of the men who built this railroad with muscle and blood, and you're kind of like, you know, you can't help but think of John Henry. And the African Americans who worked on the line, the immigrants from China, from Europe, the women that worked with them, you know, they some of the towns we played in, stopped and played in a place called Alpine in Texas. It's only there because the railroad discovered there was a source of fresh water, so they built a town. I doubt anybody in Alpine leaves town by train anymore. Yet the place wouldn't be there, and the people who laid the line and you know, worked where it's going to go from here. It's like in my country, you know, we have roads in my country that were laid out by the Romans, and their perspective on our landscape remains. Likewise, the railroad is kind of your Roman road system. You know, it was laid out by people who...
This is where we think we need to go.
This is where we're going to build our country.
Yeah.
This is where we're going to put our towns. This is where we're going to put the future. Here's the future. Because, you know, the Industrial Revolution wasn't something that happened a long way away. It came to you in the form of a railroad train, and what it must have been like when the first train came. I mean, I've seen a number of articles about people celebrating the arrival of the first railroad train. It was an incredibly big deal.
And by the same token, you know, when you get on a train physically, the concept becomes three-dimensional. It's not a static kind of flat screen movie idea, cartoon idea anymore. And in the same way, when you go back to a lot of these old songs that some of us know in our sleep, you know, when you take them up and put them in context, they also become three-dimensional. You know, for instance, you know, it's easy from a distance to think of a reference in a song to a hobo, and you think of the cartoonish idea of, you know, happy-go-lucky, just doesn't want to work, just drifting along. You actually step into these songs and try to inhabit them. You get reminded that these are desperate people. You know, these are migratory refugees. You know, they've been turned back from the border of California many times by gun thugs who, unless you've got work papers, something that proves that you've got a job waiting for you, you don't come in. You're living in squalor at the edge of town in these internment camps, essentially. And without exception, a lot of these songs that I kind of took for granted as being just sort of one-dimensional folk songs from my formative years, but no longer serviceable to someone like me. The song Midnight Special, for example, has a poetic authority in its imagery that I did not ever fully know, even though I've known the song my whole life. I don't know when I would have first heard it, but I've known it my whole life. And not till Bill pointed out to me, you know, the mythology that underwrites that story, then it all of a sudden becomes a visceral experience to step inside of it. And it just reminds all of us that so much of life has a different dimension once you actually engage it rather than just stand away and throw an opinion in its direction.
And of course, the people that Joe's talking about, those hobos that we now sort of perhaps romanticize a little bit, they're the people who've been demonized during this election cycle. You know, they're the people who are going to build a wall to keep out. They're the people.
There are obvious parallels.
Exactly. In my country too. I mean, you know, the Calais jungle is being cleared as we speak, and they're exactly the same kind of people who are coming to California that Woody wrote about in Do Re Mi, who met hostility. You know, they closed the border. These people were having to find back ways around. They lived in these terrible migrant camps. This is the Calais jungle. So every night when we sang these songs, these are not songs that are about something that happened once. These songs still have resonance. They're still about people climbing on trains without paying fare. Not for fun, not for because they're, you know, just want to go somewhere. They're doing that because they're desperate to look for work and a better life for their families. Those people are still out there, and there have been a big issue in these last few months in the election campaign.
The topicality is very timely.
And we didn't take on any song that didn't have some relevance now. I mean, the idea of singing something that just lived, you know, as a sepia-toned
nostalgia
view into the past. Held no currency for us. But everything that we took on in some way had to be viscerally relevant to where we are.
You know, I got to tell you, I expected fluency. And so I told the guys, I said, you know, I got to be on the A game here because these guys are going to know whereof they speak. But I am fascinated, and I'm the crass corporate former record guy in me thinking, has Amtrak signed up to do some sort of sync or some sort of marketing with you guys? You deserve some money.
Those guys didn't even notice us, Amtrak. They weren't really interested in it at all. I mean, we really lucked out. The one guy I got on the phone in Chicago, where we started at Chicago Union Station, a guy named Brian Mattox. He'd worked in the music business before. He's kind of like a public relations guy for Amtrak Midwest.
So he sort of got it?
Totally got it. Yeah. Absolutely got it. Yeah. Nobody else, none of his corporate people understood a thing, but he facilitated us being able to play in three really special spaces in Union Station, the Grand Hall, without being hassled, which I think probably would have been if it hadn't been for him. He introduced us to the crew, on the first crew anyway, on the Texas Eagle. And really all we had traveling down the line was his name, because everyone knew him. But other than that, you know, the new crew would get on and we'd say, we're making a record, we're going to jump off and record a song. The guy would be, okay, well, don't be too late because I've got, you know, we've got a bit, you know, we didn't want to mess around with his time. And he was pretty cool. So they were very helpful. The on-train crew staff were very, very helpful to us. But Amtrak didn't really notice us. And even the people in the railway stations getting on and off the trains, two guys playing guitars in a station is not a big deal in my country or in yours.
Yeah, we never got a look. I mean, people were fascinated by my engineer, Ryan Freeland, recording us. They're not used to seeing microphones set up and a guy with headphones and a laptop.
Someone having
floor.
A guitar case,
you know,
open.
That was unusual. But, you know, two guys with acoustic guitars, you know, they didn't turn a head.
Now, the last question I have was one that was born of true curiosity. As much as I know there was an informed... it goes beyond informed. That's too intellectual. You know, there was a passionate desire that you guys both shared about making this exploration, because it really is as much a populist documentation as it is the songs and their mythology. Did you ever feel tempted to actually hop the rails instead of buying a ticket? Because, you know, at our age, I wouldn't recommend that, because that's how you lose a leg.
I don't think so.
No.
you know, most particularly freight, in terms of freight, most of freight is containerized now, so you can't get in anyway.
Not just open doors like in the old movies, you know.
Run along and climb on that.
I'm just being pragmatic here. Yeah. My wheels, I couldn't catch up.
In some
up
ways,
with a train.
You're strange enough buying a ticket to ride across the continent on the train. That's a weird enough experience.
Cause people,
it's a great way to meet British tourists. If you want to meet plenty of them on the trains. Other than that, you know, people who don't want to fly for whatever reason, you know, they don't like it, or they have a health problem, or they don't want to show their ID to anyone. You know, it's kind of like it's a bit like being on a submarine.
Yeah.
You know, for a few days, and you kind of meet different people in the dining hall every day. Amtrak do a good thing; they always put different people together. They always put you with someone different every day, so you get to hear everybody's story. And it's like being in a small community for a while. And I think, you know, outside of the amazing vistas that we saw, the people on the train were just as interesting as the countryside.
This adds, much like the experience you had took you beyond the imagined and the historic concept, but made it come alive for you. The conversation today makes the Shine a Light, Songs from the Great American Railroad, the album, really come with great purpose and a deeper resonance. So it's going to be easy now for our fans to want to acquire this record.
In this day and age, you know, people tend to listen to a track on shuffle, you know, whether it's on Spotify or iTunes or whatever. Now, we're trying to put together a narrative that tells a story. You know, the if you listen to the record on headphones, the tracks are joined together by the sounds that happened while we were there. There's a beautiful, at the end of our take of A Gentle in My Mind, a train just happened to go by. I mean, none of it's been put in. It's there, and we're just trying to get people back to listen to an album, to, you know, follow. There's a map on the sleeve of the CD. You can get it online if you download the songs, and you can follow the journey with us and come with us on the journey. So it's a more of an immersive experience. I think records need to have a narrative with them these days to really connect with people.
It's also making me, seriously, and I've had the great pleasure of going with my sons on a train, and the joy, you know, it's a big deal.
It is.
When you first bring kids on a train, it's a big deal.
There's a incredible sensation of freedom when you get on a train in a major city. How quickly, as the train leaves, the city recedes. You know, I mean, I was on tour a couple years ago, and I took the train from Chicago to Ann Arbor. I'd gone to school in Ann Arbor, and when I was there, I would take the train sometimes on the weekends to visit my sister in Chicago. And
I thought it was just because you realize you'd never be able to drive back.
Well, no.
That would have been my story, but okay.
But, you know, you get on, and so quickly you are completely nowhere. And the city, this massive, muscular city of Chicago, has completely receded, and I wouldn't know where I was otherwise. You know, you're kind of following the river a bit, and you're out in the sticks. And it really is a very immersive experience. You know, you really do, like a submarine. Yeah. You do go under, and your landscape completely gets insular and contained, and you have a very particular vista as a result.
And there's exciting. A chug underneath.
It's exciting as well. If you're going to sleep on the train as well, it's the excitement of, you know, getting sleeping on the move and hearing the whistle, being able to do the whistle, and waking up who knows where. You wake up in the morning, where am I? It could be anywhere. The train could have been delayed overnight. It could be ahead of schedule. We were supposed to get into Union Station at 5:30 a.m. And against all odds, it's never been heard before, Amtrak got us in an hour early at 4:30 a.m. and rolled us out of our beds. Unfortunately, we were able to find a coffee shop and record the last track just as the dawn chorus began singing on the little courtyards there, you know. But it's an adventure. You kind of, it's something that you don't really do much in our lives now. You have to kind of surrender to the rail because they take as long as they take, you know, and that's, you just have to go with it. And we don't often get to do that. And the scenery's great, the food's okay, and the people are interesting.
See, now I'm inspired not only to absorb the album itself, which again, for purposes of wanting our audience to get the record, Shine a Light, Songs from the Great American Railroad. Our guests today have been Billy Bragg and Joe Henry. Man, this was like a master class. I got to go get a couple of tickets and get my boys out, and we need to go see some of America. Mm-hmm. And we'll listen on the record, and it'll provide a backdrop that certainly we couldn't have conjured up in our own minds. So I want to thank you guys for coming in. This was fun.
Oh, thank you for having us,
fun and truly inspiring. So thanks for coming by.
Oh, appreciate thank you.
It's Billy Bragg and Joe Henry, and it's live on 88.5 KCSN.